And we're live with our 293rd episode of Absolute AppSec. I am Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Excited to be back. As always, we were out last week due to life and business reasons, but as always, we come back, don't stress too much. We've made it. We did have a very successful virtual practical secure code review, AI enhanced version, a couple weeks ago. Really excited how the AI, the generative AI bits actually are meshing with secure code review in general. I'm using it internally, but like teaching other people to do it, how it's being presented in the course. And along those lines, we are doing the Harnessing LLMs for Application Security course at DEF CON in just a couple of weeks. That class is filling up quickly. It's been a go for a while from our perspective and DEF CON's perspective, and will be great, like a great resource on learning how to or starting your journey with LLMs. If you haven't done that before, if you haven't coded or scripted LLMs, if you haven't dealt with them outside of like a chat interface, this is the place to learn how to utilize them and actually start to harness that power. So that's training.defcon.org or training.absoluteappsec.com, or yeah, both of them have links there to the site. Yeah, for registration. Yeah. Yep. You getting the links there?
No, I'm getting another one in there, but I was just going to say, as I'm also looking for the security training links, so you don't have to do that. So put it in here in a second. Yeah.
Yeah. I got the training.appsec.com one up there. On another note, our sponsors of the podcast, Redpoint and Dryrun, are hosting the worst security party on Wednesday evening at Black Hat. The link is in the chat. If you would like to register, we do have a limited number of seats available, so those will be, they have to go through like a approval process to jump into it. But that will be a great great place to actually meet people, other people that's going to be more business focused, I guess I should say, security event focused, then the happy hour that we'll be doing on Thursday for the podcast itself. We've decided on Yard House. We are going to call ahead and see if we can get some sort of reservation or something in place for at least a dozen people. If you're going to be there, it's going to be very loose, to be honest. We don't have like a registration list or anything like that we're putting together. It's just come and meet, talk to other members of the podcast. Ken and I will be there. I'm sure there will be some sponsors that will pay for some drinks, and just love to have you, love to meet people from the podcast and yeah, listeners in general. Like we can talk with Paul about vibe coding again, because apparently he had a big article on LinkedIn and wants to rumble about vibe coding, I guess, or what the definition of it is.
There's a lot. I did want to call out too. Sorry, I just wanted to give a call out real quick, because CISO and CISO, SEEZO, and Eve Security also are helping co-sponsor that Wednesday party. So just to make it very clear, because I've had a lot of confusion with people. Yes, we're doing two events. One on Wednesday, where you get food and beer at a Bavarian beer garden. And then the second one is just like Seth said, very informal. We're paying for things, obviously drinks and all that. But in any case, that's a less formal, not that any of it's super formal, but less formal, if that's possible, Thursday night happy hour.
Yep.
So I know you said all that, hour. But I've learned communication, you almost have to like repeat things three times and very clearly. Otherwise people just sort of like sometimes skim over things.
Yep. Your liver is scared, Larry says in chat. Yep. As is mine, because it is Vegas, right? Like that's typically what happens there. Let's see. Outside of that, right? I don't think there's any other announcements right now. I mean, obviously we'll have other trainings coming up after DEF CON or after Hacker Summer Camp, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, right now everything is kind of hyper focused on that. And this is like, I did what we did want to talk about this a little bit on the podcast today. This couple of weeks, or about the month, 2 months before DEF CON and Black Hat, the big security conferences in the summer, we actually see kind of a pause in research, right? And it's not that research has stopped, it's that people don't want to release when the air gets sucked out of the room by the big releases that happen at DEF CON. So you get a lot of teasers, one of them from like Portswigger and James Kettle, who has been on the podcast before. Yep, HTTP 1 must die, more request smuggling research and like bug bounties that they've discovered through that. I know we have our own, or me personally, I have my own reservations with some of those big announcements like that and the how effective it actually is for application security practitioners. These are great from like an overall industry perspective, and we're like trying to solve big problems on a large scale. But from a custom code perspective, HTTP 1, like I honestly, I don't run into it that much. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts there, Ken? Like, you know, ramping up to DEF CON and Black Hat and B-Sides Las Vegas. Like, what is your feeling about research in general?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can peel back the curtain a little bit and say that, like, I think this has been true every company I've ever been at that's been a security company, is that we just don't, you know, within 2 weeks of leading up to Black Hat DEF CON, all cool stuff gets kind of just shoved away till after. And on top of that, we know that the week after is also tends to be flooded with just tons of noise, right? So to actually be the signal above all that noise, the easier way to do that is to just wait, right? Because even if you have great research, there's just a ton of great research that comes out. So yeah, you're right. Like that is the way that everybody works. And it's not just research. It's like if you've got
company like product
features, mm-hmm. any announcement at all, you do tend to, I'm actually have like several things where right now we're holding off on, and we're just being very quiet about. Until after. But yeah, I think it's with this HTTP 1.1 desync talk, I did want to say, like, it sounds like he's going to expand on even more interesting ways that they've, you know, attacked that. And he mentions like a scenario where they gained $200,000 in bug bounties in 2 weeks. I mean, that's going to be interesting. And I think anybody who's using HTTP 1 will still be using it probably after the talk. So that's my actual, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Honestly, that's what I've seen in the past, right? Is that the talks themselves, like they have an effect, but it's usually on those large scale providers, right? So like it is on a Cloudflare or, you know, CloudFront or whatever it is that they're looking at HTTP 1.1, they're starting to disable it, they're starting to deprecate it. If you are using like reverse proxies or anything like that through Nginx, or like you've got some other layer in front of your application server, that's where this starts to come into play. And so there is going to be an architectural component that I'm going to take into application security and when I'm advising clients as far as, right, oh, it looks like you're using HTTP 1.1. Guess what? We probably don't want to enable that anymore, right?
Yes.
And yeah, honestly, okay. So, and this goes back, remember the talk that I gave, what was that, 2014, 17, whatever it is, like AppSec, or that was Black Hat Asia, like on like the security bots, right? Like basically utilizing bots to identify security issues quickly and then resolving them. But one of the main components or points in my talk was we have a tendency not to fix things unless they can be fully exploited, as opposed to, hey, there's a problem. Let's actually just go and fix it now so that it doesn't become a bigger issue in the future. And so HTTP 1.1 is one of those, right? The fact that it's exploited, we know that there's issues with the way that it handles request smuggling, the way that it handles like multi-chain requests, like all this sort of like flaws that are built in, that are inherent in the protocol. So do you really need a full exploit and full compromise to disable, or should you just go ahead and take care of it? Right.
Yeah. It's kind of like having old SSL or old TLS, you know, old crypto in general. Yeah. It's like, all right.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you can update. Still store your passwords using MD5 hashes, right? You can still do that if you want to, but yeah, you probably shouldn't, right? Like, you know, that's one of those things that you should be like upgrading over time. And yeah, any outdated protocols like that should be eliminated. If it's not already on your backlog, it should be at this point. So
yeah, anyway, I mean, we all know it really does take like a presentation like what James Kettle is giving and has given for anyone to take action. So that's why these conferences are still so meaningful, because it's like, yeah, you're not going to get, even though it, like at the end of the day, it's like James has spent countless hours on this, right? And done really good, solid work and really uncovered the flaw. And then the fix is frankly very simple, you know, to just upgrade. Disable. Yeah, exactly. To just upgrade. And it's like,
yep.
It's just sort of like, there's a lot of work, that painstaking work that has to be done. And then it has to be put into a format that like opens people's eyes. And then it has to be given at a place where that, you know, that stage is huge and that reach is huge. And then, and only then will people go and maybe go and click that button and say, well, yeah, shouldn't do that anymore. Yep. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm just like, it's just a lot of work to get.
It is.
And you need it, and you need it. And that's why we do these conferences, is why we do this research and do this work.
Yeah, it's the spotlight. So to Robert's point, right, like it's classic should versus must. So this new report the new research from James will probably push this into the must category, right? Yeah, like you've probably been limping along. You're trying to support old Android clients or old Android apps or whatever Java clients that are connecting via HTTP 1.1. Guess what? You're just going to have to cut that at this point, right? The long tail is not worth it. If someone can use HTTP 1.1 to take over your application or to expose users' data or, you know, all that other things that are going to go into this. Yeah, so those punchy releases and talks, I have a love-hate relationship with them because of that, right? Like, I love that it's spurring us forward. It is creating conditions where people have to pay attention. But the internal AppSec professional in me hates that we have to use that hammer in this way. That we have trained our developers, we have trained our organizations to pay attention to the big shiny button instead of the little stuff, the Crocs and socks, as it were, of security that would actually prevent a lot of this from happening. Along those lines, you should build out your schedule. You can do that already. Hacker Tracker is available. There is a web version of Hacker Tracker at hackertracker.app that we run. Shout out to Caleb for his development efforts there, as he is actually putting that together. That one does not actually allow you to build a favorites list, right? The one that I posted in there. If you want to actually build out a full list of the talks that you want to go to via Hacker Tracker, you'll have to do that in the mobile apps, whether that's Android or iOS. I have pushed out a new version of iOS that should be coming within the next couple of days. We're actually using LLMs of all things to find related talks as well. That's one of the new features that's going into it. We'll talk through it in the harnessing course, right? Like what the techniques that I used, but realistically, you know, identifying talks that you may be interested in that were outside of the search box in those in general cases. Nowadays, like there will be a list of related talks on each of the content detail screens in HackerTracker now.
Hey, in the private chat, something for you, Seth. I'm curious if that's the right. I just wanted to give credit where credit was due, but I want to make sure that's the right profile.
I believe it is, yes, but let me make sure. Yep, that's Caleb.
Okay, cool. So just so that we give Caleb some love here for all the efforts, I want to make sure. I only have the LinkedIn link, so, but yeah, that's Caleb's profile. That's okay. Caleb Kinney. Yeah.
Yep. Caleb's been helping us for a couple of years. Yeah. Yeah, you would. There's a lot of effort behind the scenes to make that actually run. And on top of that, like HackerTracker is available for other conferences. You will see a lot of the B-Sides events, a lot of European events that are in there. What Hackers Yearn is one of the new ones that was popped in this year, which is a huge conference in Europe. If you are running a conference and would like it to be hosted in HackerTracker, please reach out either in app or just ping me and I will point you in the right direction. We've got a great data wrangler and great team over there that supports that. It's just a community project. Cool. All right. Do you want to jump into that article, Ken?
Yeah, yeah. This is one Seth sent me, and I was like, I was reading it. I was catching up on it with Seth in real time, so he actually saw my reaction. But I was just like, oh my gosh, yes, I agree so much. So I don't know if you wanted to pull the article up or if you want me to. I don't really have a preference.
Yep, I can share it here. Do that. You shared the link. So it's from Venture and Security. I'll blow it up a little bit so it's easier to see. So we are like showing it, but you can find it in the show notes. It's from Venture and Security. Nilette DeMello is a security engineer currently at Datadog. Focusing on integrating security into engineering workflows. So it's typical what you would expect from an AppSec professional, somebody who has been in the industry for a while and has some interesting takes on where and why application security fails. And it's often like the line that caught me initially on this is that app or prod security operates in an interesting space where theory meets reality and often do not match up as neatly as we would like. That's a pretty succinct way of presenting the problem that we have as AppSec consultants, AppSec engineers, that all the stuff that we learn at these conferences, we go and listen to James Kettle, doesn't in fact apply to what we do on a day-to-day basis. We're trying to take these abstract concepts that we learn about, say AAA, say request smuggling, say the vulnerabilities and flaws that exist in the application security space, and apply them to a customized program and custom applications in a way that is effective. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's reasons for this. But she is breaking down a number of reasons why we end up having these problems, right? What are your thoughts here, right? Like before I start, you know, jumping into the article specifically.
Oh no, I think like just immediately when she was talking about like, well, what we see in conference talks, like security champion programs that people felt like they had success with or tooling that they had success with. And, you know, it basically, she kind of, I think correctly points out, like, I think, and you know, we've all felt this, you go to a talk and you're like, oh, that sounds really awesome. And I'm excited about that. And that's awesome that it worked for you. And then some time goes on and you start to maybe critically think a little bit more. And then you like maybe dig in a little bit more. And then you find out, oh, some of that was true. Some of it wasn't. Some of it was just for the talk, you know, to get a talk going. And it was like the rosy, the rosy lens, basically, that, you know, you're going to speak to whatever that thing, it, you know, was. And that's just not how it works. And then also that there's kind of this, so there, just start there. There's some gaps with what people purport to have success with and then what actually delivers. That's the first gap. Another gap mentioned in this article, which this is the one that's really important to obviously to me, which is, you know, it's like, okay, well, we have like, so if you're an AppSec or ProdSec person, you're like, okay, well, I need to make sure my libraries are secure because obviously I can't have like massive critical CVEs in my code base. And then I have to make sure that my code shipped is, you know, not vulnerable. So we have to, you know, if you're having like a bunch of transactions each day, I can't look at all of that code. So what do? I put a little automated tooling in, maybe a SaaS product, whatever. And then they kind of just, she just breaks down real succinctly and very quickly, like, here's the problem. And here was the like vendor solution. Now, correctly again, points out like now everything says, well, AI powered, right? That's the sort of like vendor pitch now. And everything sort of leaves out of the mix are the real problems that people are facing on a day-to-day basis. And I totally agree with this. Like, some concrete examples of this were things I've already talked about on the podcast. Like, I'll just point to my most recent experience with GitHub. It's like, there are new things shipping I didn't know about just right then and there. There's new things that are important that are shipping and I can't correctly like prioritize the risk on those things. And I don't have visibility. Separate to that, and this is very alike in one of the examples that she discusses, or very, very similar to one of the examples she discusses, which was like, basically saying a simple question from a developer, is it okay to store this access token in a local storage? And mm-hmm. she like correctly points out that there are about at least six pieces of context that I need to gather from like different types of information or factors or whatever you want to call it. Factors, conditions, environment, context, whatever you want to call it. Some factors here that, you know, I need to answer before I can give you an answer. And that is the real crux of the issue, is that it's hard in a program to find, whether it's tooling or your own internally built automation or whatever, it's hard to give answers, because it's hard to get answers like in a quick fashion and kind of get up to speed. And of course, like, you know, this only gets worse the more outgunned you are in terms of like code velocity shipping to like how many people you have working on security. So for me, that first part just hit home so heavily, which is like, you need to give people ways to surface the data that's meaningful to them, to then answer questions that need to be answered internally, right? So anyways, I'll pause there, and because I want to hear from you, but those are the things that just really right away, I was like, oh my God, yes, this somebody understands it.
Yeah. And I like, as a third party, right? Like, so I love that we don't need more data. We need contextual intelligence to make this better decisions faster. And this gets a little strange, because as a third party, in most cases coming into an organization, trying to gain context about an application, there's a lot of stuff that I have to ignore in order to do some sort of analysis. Like, scope is really important for us, because that's what defines the work that we do. But on top of that, we have no context as far as like, where is this application deployed in most cases, like especially internally, what sort of like, just trying to gain context about the roles that an application uses, the different users that are going to be in there, who has access to what, whether or not it's an issue to see someone else's data, or if you should be able to see, like, I feel like all that I do in these assessments is mainly looking at context, trying to gain context about an application in order to give some sort of security analysis on the bugs that we find, right? Some cases, you know, authorization issues are massive, and other cases they just don't care, right? Like, and attempting to do that quickly is very difficult. most of the tooling that we're putting into place now is, could be summarized as an effort to gain context and use AI to gain that context. That's, you know, identification of vulnerabilities is great, but gaining context is massive in my space.
Yeah, there's definitely, right. That's the power of what that can give you, is actually capturing that knowledge and helping with some of the scaling parts that she correctly points out, which is, yeah, just like, that's the challenge, right? Is collecting that information and quickly and surfacing the data out of there, that extrapolating basically the data out of what you've gathered that actually is meaningful. And I also wanted to add that Larry in our Slack had said, you know, he pointed out, if you scroll down to the section 5, that first sentence that she wrote just is so impactful. I really agree with this. I love what she said. The gate versus guardrail philosophy. You can't protect velocity with brakes. You need a steering wheel. As practitioners, the North Star is all about providing security controls that enable rather than constrain development velocity. That's not just like a pie in the sky, nice comment. I fully agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think concretely putting, like, I'm going to ask you in a second, Seth, what you think about putting gates in. But from my experience, gates are usually put into place with automated tooling. Now, you can say, you could go back to waterfall in theory and say, like, no, now before you release this, all of this gets bundled up. And yeah, I guess you could do that. We'll do a review and okay, you got to fix it. And then we'll do another review. And in a few months, we'll ship this feature that should have shipped in, you know, a day. Cool. Maybe you can do that. Probably not. So in most cases, what is it? It's like a tool, right? And the tools are what the tools, at least the tools of yesterday, they just, you know, they just look for basic stuff. They throw up a flag and they say, oh, whether that's, you know, something with your, like, one of your dependencies had like a CVE in it, or, you know, I don't know, like you put in a pattern and it was like, something that a pattern matcher would think is like a, or a linter or SAST or whatever you want to call it, would be like, oh, this is, you know, to me, they're all in the same field, obviously. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they just find something that doesn't have any like context. There's no context behind it. It just says like, oh, I think I saw a pattern. Maybe it's vulnerable. So when you block in those conditions, what do? You end up causing what? You're not stopping right then and there and addressing that and helping the developer. That's not how it works in real shops. No, you file a bug ticket. So your life becomes managing bug tickets. And then you'll find yourself in a place where you're going to be like, well, I actually need a smarter way to prioritize these bug tickets. I'm going to get an ASPM. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's how that journey begins. Right.
Yep.
And so it's just like you end up with this huge backlog of a mix of things that might be real security issues. Probably a lot of them aren't. You've pretty much burned a lot of your political capital and relationships with developers. So you have a worse security posture, and it's only going to get worse from here because people are not incentivized to care about anything you say anymore. Mm-hmm. So it only gets worse from there is my point. So I see this and I'm like, God, that is such an accurate, if you could give guidance versus gates, or in this case, guardrails. So it's not necessarily guidance. It's more like, so long as you don't go outside of these conventions, we should be fine. And if you do, we should have something in place to detect that you've gone outside those conventions. That to me is still a better result. But I will also just temper this before I turn it over to you, Seth, because I am curious what you've seen here. But what I see though too, is that if you're not careful and you're giving guidance and not gating, people can also just ignore the guidance and just continue mm-hmm. on. And then the security person's left in a situation where they're sitting there like, okay, well, I didn't block because I'm told that's bad. And I know maybe from past experiences that that's bad, but like, and this is for like small features. These are for big features that are going through a release. I'm not talking about just like actual code changes. I'm talking about like, you know, going through even a releases process, right? All of these situations, like, what are you going to do? Stop to go. And I've done this. I made this mistake. I made a mistake at GitHub. I put in a harder gate than I should have put in with, and later we fixed that with risk prioritization with like good old fashioned math and a calculator kind of thing and a questionnaire. But in the beginning, it was a hard gate. And so you've got this product, it's ready to go, or this feature or whatever, it's ready to go. But now you've got seven different security teams opening up issues and trying to like dig in on their different things they think that you should care about. And all that leads to basically no resolution. Everyone's upset. Nobody knows why we haven't shipped the thing. And so like, this is such a problem throughout AppSec and ProdSec, and it just hasn't been, you know, solved, we'll say. And now I'm just going to hand it over to you, Seth, because I've just been ranting for a while.
Yeah, no. And like, to jump onto your last point there, I don't think it's just a security problem. This is a release problem for software in general. How do you ensure quality software goes out the door? And part of the pitfall that we get sucked into as security is that security is different than just general quality or like testing that occurs to make sure an application is up to snuff before it's been delivered, right? Or software is being delivered to clients. So there's gates that are in place. There's guardrails that are in place. I struggle because most of the organizations that I deal with are sold a bill of goods. You know, if I'm looking at this breakdown that she provided earlier in the article, that the DevSecOps tools will keep you safe. And this is definitely an organizational maturity thing, and we're trying to get to the point where we're providing guardrails with a lot of these organizations, and we're helping them build out their application security program. But the vendors come in and do us a disservice in that they are like, hey, we've got this ASPM tool and it's going to solve all your problems about your AppSec program. You can run everything out of here. And, you know, it's ignoring the gaps that go into that, the contextual gaps, the, you know, organizational workflow, the fact that there isn't some sort of a knowledge base that they can draw from, that they don't even have requirements in place a lot of times from a security perspective. And yeah, it's great. You can collect this vulnerability data and throw it into a dashboard and tell people to go fix it. But if the overall organization is already broken and you don't have gates or something in place to at least get your eyes on the code before it goes out the door, it's never going to be secure. And there's always going to be breaches that occur. There's always going to be vulnerabilities in that code.
Yeah. And, you know, like there's another problem too, that we haven't really even touched upon, which is like, we kind of talked about it, I guess, but you know, it's like, so to compound all of the things that you just said is that, you know, we're talking about like more from like a code security review standpoint, right? But there's times where you're just giving architectural advice. I can remember I spent like a year and a half on code spaces, securing code spaces for GitHub before I turned it over to someone else on the team. And during that time, I had to answer a lot of like just precarious questions, like things where I had to really, man, I have to stop and think about that. And there's a lot of interconnected systems. I remember looking at a lot of diagrams for how Microsoft was spinning up certain things that power code spaces on theirs, because we had two teams, you know, GitHub and Microsoft working together. There's not a lot I can get into on all of that, obviously, but I can say that just in broad strokes, you know, there's obviously if you're running a server, there's going to be some virtual components, right? That's what CodeSpaces is. It's a virtual IDE, but the server full version also has like, you know, it's a Docker container, right? Or some kind of I actually don't remember. It's like some sort of VM of some kind that's running stuff, right? So all I'm trying to say is this actual machine. It's not just an IDE. So, and then you're authenticating, you know, to that through a web property. And you can just imagine like how many things are actually going on and how many components are talking to each other. I'm saying all this to be like, you know, I feel like these days, some parts of that would have been easier to gather context on certain things. Like what I mean concretely is if I fed certain diagrams in and said, okay, I need to think about X, Y, Z, I do think I'd get some pretty good potential risks out of that, right? And if I was to do the same with like a code base and use like an AI integrated IDE, I'm sure I could ask certain questions that would gather sort of context. But, you know, the more capabilities to sort of summarize the kinds of information that we need, I feel like that would have helped me so much, because it is such a challenge to give advice to other people when you're literally on a call getting up to speed on a brand new thing with a lot of abstract concepts, and you're trying to give really solid advice. And sometimes that advice really has to be well thought out, because the impact, it's hard to at scale say, like, or to comprehend rather, the literal cost of some of those security decisions, right? Because mm-hmm. some operations then become infinitely more expensive at scale. So there's all of the factors of like, yeah, everything from cost to latency to all of the things. And yes, my security recommendations have to take those things into account. But then I also have to take into account all of these various disconnected pieces. And I have to take into account, what are the latest standards? Because some of the things that we had to do going back and forth, shuttling sessions and things of that nature, what are the best web standards that are offered right now to do that securely? You know, it is so many different, there are so many different pieces of information that you sort of have to tie together. And that's why I'm saying, like, I think at least now we're in a world where there is a capability. I haven't seen anybody deliver on it super well, but there is a capability to answer questions as like an internal consultant better.
Yep. I'm with you there. Like that's the ideal, like getting that context quickly to be able to answer those questions. I'd much rather be in that situation. I want to address what Robert's saying here as well, because I think that fits into the conversation nicely. But what I'm seeing over time is that the tools, the vendors do us a disservice, because it doesn't allow us to gain that context to the point of this article in order to implement kind of these higher level controls or these higher level processes in order to address security. Instead, we're being forced to be very tactical, to Robert's point, right? A lot of AppSec folks resort to managing scanners, pushing teams to fix whatever's coming out of those scans. I'm working with multiple clients that get pushed by customers' security teams to fix external findings that don't really have security impact on an organization, but because their scanner found it, this customer, you know, ran some external scan against a website, they found like a CSP issue, they don't agree with how that CSP was built, all of a sudden you're spending time and effort and money fixing a problem that doesn't necessarily impact the overall security of your application in any way, shape, or form, but you're having to push that onto developers, you're pulling things out of those vulnerability scanners. And like, part of me is like, what are we at, like 2006 again, right? Like that's what AppSec was when you and I were getting into this industry, was, hey, we go run a scanner, we validate those findings, we write a report, and that's what we're giving to developers. And I would like to be in the place where we are jumping onto calls with the developers, we're actually, you know, pushing fixes, we're talking about the real security issues involved in implementing OAuth, in implementing, you know, some new framework and researching what it takes to actually do that securely. But a lot of times my customers are pushed by external forces that they don't control, I guess is where I'm going with that.
Yeah. And I don't think AppSec's future is doing that shit, right? Like, I don't think our AppSec future is, especially like, okay, I'll just say it. I'm, you know, yes, I can tell you like statistically, we now cut out with our product 98% to 99% of what people might consider nitpicks, mostly it's nitpicks, not like invalid things. And so what comes through is just high signal risk. I don't see a future for AppSec like needing to go through, and like you can get to remediate, you know, like you don't need a human being necessarily all the time. Like, what you do is you bubble up to a human the things that are like, yeah, you're a human, you should go check this out. And then everything else is covered. No, I think over time, all of that will change. But I do think our value is always, always in sort of that internal consultant role, right? Where we're giving guidance, we're helping, whether that's through, there's so many things we do, right? We manage bug bounty programs and resolution and incident response, training for developers, customer relationships with developers, managing our GRC requirements, giving design considerations for new features and products being shipped, building guardrails, you know, everything under the sun. It's not always just finding vulnerabilities, right? So I think that'll hopefully become more and more of an activity that's sort of a self sort of running thing in this new world that we're moving towards. I'm already seeing that, but I think like what people lack is just what this article really touches on, which is all the very various disparate bits of information that would help inform not only a singular activity, like I mentioned with like giving consultant guidance to say like a Codespaces project, for instance, but at a macro level, like literally helping to reshape and prioritize your program. Maybe it is about a category of vulnerability. Maybe based off of all the data that you're receiving, right? From bug bounty reports, internal reports, the code that's changing, the functional requirements that you're seeing, or the functional requirements delivered on in products that are shipping, whatever it is, right? New CDs being released, all that data should be correlated. So you might come away from that data realizing, oh man, I got a massive CSERF problem inside my organization. It's just a big, let's build guardrails just for CSERF and burn down that vulnerability. Or I have a lot of content injection. Let's focus on our CSP. Let's focus on our cookie protections. Let's focus on whatever else we feel like needs to be focused on here. It's sort of like, maybe it's something different. Maybe it's actually like, hey, developers are unaware of like access control mechanisms and how they actually work for whatever platform in here. So we're going to prioritize that. But you don't get to that state. I guess my point is you don't get to any of those states without having that data correlated and contextualized. And that's really the heart of this whole article. And yeah. I'm excited about it because like this is where my head's been at. Is like we just need to give people the data and then let them do with it what they may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it can be overwhelming, right? Like you and I was complaining to you yesterday, right? Like looking at a code base and like in the course of, you know, most recent changes since the last security test that we did against this code base, diffs? There's been 17,000 diffs across a Java application, right? 17,000 diffs. Even in the course of a month, I'm not going to get to 17,000 diffs to do analysis, right? Like from a manual perspective. And so like figuring out the context of what has changed in the application over the course of that period, like I've got to use some sort of automated tool. I need help in gaining that context of what I should really be spending my time on. So we're using LLMs to actually help like focus down some of that effort, like to summarize what's actually going on, where that's actually at. But even then, 17,000 reports of those diffs is just as hard to deal with as 17,000 diffs, right? And so like it's a unique problem space, and it's only going to increase over time. You're going to get more and more data that needs to actually be summarized to the different risks that, you know, Robert was talking about, like whether it's technical, organizational, or compliance risks, right? Like in this article, we've got to have some direction. And then I go full nihilistic too, because I like the organizations that I'm dealing with on a daily basis, probably 70 to 80% of them don't even have the capability in-house to deal with simple compliance risks, right? Much less, you know, very difficult technical risks or access control risks. I can point out vulnerabilities, but trying to get them to take a step back to the larger context and helping them organize, yeah. I guess, that risk is just, I don't have a good place to start.
That's their whole, I mean, like, how do you start with something like that? It's, really, seriously, like, that's, and, you know, I was talking to somebody just before this podcast, and, you know, I was talking to someone because I was telling you, like, hey, I might be a little late, or I'm running late. This person, I won't give any details whatsoever, but long story short, I think it was like they ran a scanner and they had like 2,400 or 24,000. I don't know. Some insane. And they're like, yeah, I got to go and validate all of these. Like, I have to validate all these myself. I work through the weekends now to burn this down. And I believe this person started using AI integrated IDEs to help speed up the validation of the individual reports from their old style incumbent legacy linter SAS. I've got to the point where, anyway, all right, I'll stop shitting on those tools but they should be. But I will say this, here's the other thing that like, when you really, how do I say this? When you sort of dial all of this back, right? And you think about sort of where it's headed. One issue I'm seeing a lot of, and this is the thing I can't wrap my head around. So what I keep hearing, and I'm sure that our listeners can relate to this, is that like budgets for headcount are problematic at times now, which is just something it's always been the inverse of that, right? Like where it's like, we've got the budget, but it's hard to find like software security experts. It's just hard to find people that do this job. Well, now I'm seeing like some headcount loss. Also, we all have known for the last couple of years that budgets have gotten slashed, just generally speaking, not just for headcount, but for like whatever it might be, just money in general has been slashed. It's why I keep asking people, are you going to Black Hat or DEF CON? And they're like, yeah, my company isn't paying to send us there this year. Right. I've had that conversation a bunch. I don't know if you have too, Seth, but I've heard this a lot. And it, to me, it's like, I don't know if people realize this yet, or I've figured it out, but you actually need AppSec and ProdSec more now than ever. And there's two specific, well, there's really one reason, right? LLMs. But there's two reasons why. One is any product, and I'm in the process of benchmarking to show this is true. All these vendors that keep saying like, oh no, like we'll secure your products you're developing around AI. Like, sure, we do Gen AI security. Yeah, they don't. I have the receipts, and I'm going to expose all of that pretty soon. So if you're listening and you're one of those companies, be prepared. Secondly, people building code using LLMs, right? So AI integrated IDEs. Here's concretely, there are so many problems. Like, okay, as much of a fan of as I am of a skilled person using those tools to enhance themselves, I am very much not a fan of non-skilled people using it to build code. And here's why. As I have used this, because I've, you know, had the whole team start to learn how these tools work, so we actually got in depth with them, I've realized, like, dude, and I've seen it too, I'm sure. Like, there are stupid things where it's like you ask it to do something and it's doing, like, let's say there's six files that all are doing the same operation. It'll just go and make wildly different changes in six separate files rather than just like go to a central location and unify that logic, for instance. And that's from a functional perspective. You can only imagine from a security perspective what these things are getting wrong. And now I went to like a dinner where I sat there and somebody told me like, oh yeah, yeah, we like actually like our junior and I guess analyst level, medium level, I don't know what you would call that, folks writing code because they're better with AI in assisted IDEs. And you could almost feel like a clenching of like everybody that was there, like, oh no, like that's, wait a second, that's kind of scary. Like you don't understand the ramifications of that. So I'm sitting around here, I'm looking and I'm seeing people think like this technology is like a panacea, like, oh, you're like, we can slash headcount. It's like, no, actually, like you have now code being developed for Gen AI purposes that has no security tooling that's securing it. And then you've got, again, like people shipping code, more code than ever, and probably more likely than not. And I'll admit this, that Paul McCarty, I never said he was completely wrong. I just said that I think in the long term, there will be some correction here. But in the short term, I admitted, even from the beginning, that there's going to be a lot of pain. And man, am I seeing that pain. So don't get rid of your headcount. In fact, if anything, you should be looking for more AppSec, ProdSec folks, is my point. Very long-winded point. Dude, I'm sitting here just looking at it. What do you think? Because I'm just like, it's blowing my mind. Like, you guys have no idea. Like, there's a big storm coming, and you're like getting rid of the people that help clean up.
Oh, it is, right? Like, and but it goes back to this conclusion that is being made, right? That the fundamental challenge here is that it's not technical, it's philosophical, right? It's not just shifting left, buying smarter scanners, whatever it is, but we have to align our security philosophies to the workflows that they support. It is hard to customize an application security program for any organization because it requires adjustments in both engineering and security in order to make it work. Tools in general want to ignore that, or they want you to utilize their approach, whatever they came up with, as opposed to what has organically grown within a company. And but without that alignment, you're never going to have a functioning application security program. I can't tell you the number of failed AppSec programs that I've seen. Like, I don't think I could count them on, because it's a hard problem, and like moving the needle even slightly in some organization takes monumental effort, and identifying the right resources and everything else that goes into that. And then you get a new CISO who decides that they don't like any of the tooling that you have paid for, and so they're going to change it all. They've got their favorites. They read the latest Gartner report, whatever it is. Or you get a new CTO that just doesn't find security that interesting and has been tasked with pushing out product features over everything else. It is a constant, constant battle. And I just don't see the alignment coming together very quickly. But I'm with you that we cut those people that are supposed to be aligning security and security philosophy with an organization. The more of those that we cut, the less likely it is that we're going to have an effective program. But as long as we've got our SOC 2 Type 2, we must be secure.
Yeah. SOC 2 Type 2, man. Yeah. And like, the cool thing is that there are answers here, right? Like, there, like, to be fair, there's the philosophical standpoint, there's the technical standpoint, there's like sort of market conditions, and I think we've touched on all three. From the technical standpoint perspective, like, yeah, we have now as an industry a capability where we can summarize things going on, and, you know, we can contextualize data better than ever, and, you know, everything from using, I don't want to get into too much on the technical side and instead kind of want to focus on the philosophical side, right? And the market condition side. So like philosophically, I think we've all kind of, most of us have agreed that guardrails make sense versus gates. I think we've all agreed that, guidance is helpful, and kind of being harsh and saying like, you go and do this and fix this because I think it's wrong, or something said it's wrong, and not really investing. Those are all bad practices. And at the same time, though, like, I just want to point out that, you know, if I'm one security person and I've got property spread throughout the world with developers in different time zones and different teams. And by the way, this is real stuff. I've seen this, and I'm sure you have too, where it is a one or two person team supporting a global organization from a software security standpoint. I can't do those things. I actually have to maybe consider like what I should. More so saying, what should I do? Mm-hmm. Should I get rid of a bunch of things and just say like, well, hey, business, like going back to it philosophically, you've decided that I'm worth, and this kind of plays into the market condition side of things too. You've decided that your security to you is worth X amount of dollars. And in those X amount of dollars, this goes back to basics. I've been saying this and you've been saying this for a very long time. you have this amount of dollars that you're willing to invest. That means you're okay with significant risk. Within these dollars, these are the activities that I can tell you can be done and are the most impactful. And then here are the things that you're not going to get. And if you wanted to get those things, this is how much it would cost. It is literally then a business decision and a, well, I can do my best with what you now know. You have to put it in front of them. You have to put it on them. You have to say, well, you are as a C level exec, you're signing off on all these risks that are going to potentially and probably happen. But so long as you're okay with that, understand that I don't have a choice and I just have to be okay with that and work here and do as best as I can. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's going to be the way that it operates. So what do you think? That's, I mean, do you think that's fair?
I do think it's fair. The problem is that's such a hard conversation as an analyst, as a security engineer to have with upper management, especially again, when you have vendors coming in saying, yeah, but for half the cost of that security engineer, we can deliver you this product that will solve your security woes, right? And them like trying to get people that aren't trained in security to have a security mindset is such a difficult problem, right? For them to actually identify the risk. And it's a communication issue. It's a philosophical issue for an organization. What were you going to say?
No, to your point though, if they buy that product you just said, right? Like you just said, they're like, well, the vendor promised me this. They said this. So guess what? No, we are going to go with this. You're going to do that. What happens then? You have to do all of the training for all the people. You have to go through all the different, like, I know the process. I sell software. I get it. Like you got to do the demo calls, get through all the sales process. Once you're through that with procurement and through everything else, now you've got to start doing a rollout plan. Once you get a rollout plan in place, you actually start doing some of that. You've got to train people on it. You've got to get your other tooling integrated with it. You got to get everybody on board on it. And then you've got to refine it, right? So now like a thing you didn't even want because you're like, I don't have time to manage this thing. That's like literally all of what your job is now, except it's not because they still require the other things. It is a hard conversation to have, but I don't know of any other solution but having proper boundaries for work and saying like,
yeah,
you made a choice. I didn't. Here's what you get.
Exactly. I can't tell you like some of my initial experiences, you know, in the industry as a security engineer were exactly that problem, that the CISO was super fond of buying the latest and greatest like vulnerability tools and exploitation tools. He'd go to Black Hat and be sold on the, you know, Metasploit when it first came out as a commercial product. And would come back, he'd drop, you know, 50 grand or whatever it was on a couple licenses of his Metasploit and come back and drop it in our lap when we have no time or budget in our days to actually take that into account, type thing, right? And so it was like this constant battle of, oh, great, the CISO just went and bought us a new tool and we have no one that can actually even deploy that tool for our use cases here. It'd be great, but it's going to require two more headcount to actually just monitor what's coming out of, you know, this new like SIM tool or whatever it was. Bro, we didn't have a good answer to it besides, okay, that's great. It's just going to sit on the shelf. Yeah. And in a year, he's going to come and say, well, why didn't you use it? We'd be like, because you didn't give us people to do it, right? Like, that was the conversation that actually...
That's a fair way to handle it, to just be like, well, listen, I told you, you still bought it, you loved it, and it's there, and I don't have any problem, like, running it or whatever, because you paid for it, but we don't have anybody to go and manage that, but here's what it would cost you to do that. Are we want to do that? Or we just want the tool to sit there?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, of course you always get like that comes up that'll come down to your, like your manager, right? And your chain of command and how, like, what really, I guess I'm saying that really gets pretty like subjective in the response as to who you're actually talking to. But I did want to point out another thing too, that Robert said here, which is, let me put it on the screen, because I think this is so important to call out. And I have thoughts on this because I've dealt with this recently. Part of this is supporting educated C-level decisions. AppSec is such a technical domain that folks get lost in the vendor sauce. And it's not just vendor sauce. It's
lost in the sauce of AppSec. And I agree with that. So I know, because I have conversations with people from the C-suite on down to just analyst level practitioners. That's just part of the deal of selling this kind of product, right? Now, what I've realized with the C-suite, and this is, I'm so glad you said this, because it's kind of been blowing my mind the last few weeks. It's only been the last few weeks that I've really come to this conclusion, which is that a lot of CISOs, and there are like CISOs that are just crazy technical and like they have like crazy AppSec skills, but there are also like a larger pool which don't understand AppSec. AppSec is a very hard thing to explain to people. I've watched my entire career, like many of you listening, watching. I know Seth, you've seen it. The eyes glaze over because they're like, I don't even know what you're, is that bad what you're saying? Is that, how bad is that? Like, is that something we should do? So they don't, and then this blows my mind. Many believe that AppSec is a solved domain. Many believe that. When you talk to them, like, well, yeah, we run Sneak. So like we get Sneak code and Sneak SCA. We're covered, like all vulnerabilities, like we're good. Yeah. I'm like, well, are you guys building for Gen AI products? Like, yeah, we're doing that. Okay, well, that doesn't cover any of that. So we can just start there. Like, how does that work? And they're like, oh, wait, well, but no, they say they do like AI native or like AI you know, like how Copilot submits a PR and then you see like that was the author and you can scan it. They're like, yeah, they do that. And I'm like, oh my God. So you think, and I'm not picking on one vendor. I'm saying this about, this is true for all vendors, former vendor or whatever, like current incumbent. And I don't know what I should say. People that did it the old way. I sit there and I hear them say like, oh, it's like, oh no, we've got, like I said, SCA, we've got SAST, we've got DAST, we've got container scanning, we've got this, that, and the other. So like AppSec is like not a problem for us. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yep.
You have no idea. You just don't know. You think we as AppSec people are like, yeah, like we're not happy here. We know this is bad. We know this isn't good, and it's not just tooling. It's a lot of things, right? It's like the security champions stuff, right? Like when that first came out, there wasn't a lot of good guidance around it. People messed that up a lot. There were a lot of problems with security. Nobody talks about that, or a lot of people don't talk about it, I would say. I don't hear much about it, but I know, like, at least publicly, but from our, you know, like when you and I go to conferences or we talk to students or whatever, and you just talk to people, you're like, you hear what happened with their security champion stories. And it's not to say it can't be done well. It's just to say that when it first came out, it was done, you know, people saw it in a conference talk and then went tried to apply it and they didn't have all the details and they didn't do it right. So not just tooling, sometimes it's processes, but it's not a solved. I guess I'm saying none of us agree on one thing. We can't even fucking agree on pen test versus vulnerability assessment versus, you know what I mean? Like, what does scan mean? What does pen testing mean? What is, you know? So I'm just like, now take all of that and realize that like a CISO who has many domains of security to care about is probably thinking it's a mostly solved deal and like they've got all their stuff in place and they're fine. So anyways, like, yeah, it's just,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This is maybe a venting session, but I was blown away to hear that a lot of the C-suite thinks this is just, everything's just fine and dandy.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, again, like the smaller orgs that I deal with, like they know that it's an issue, but you know, to Robert's point as well, right? Like my own eyes glaze over when it's not something that I'm super interested in, but the amount of times that I like have a hard time, even with other security people, understanding why we should be doing something like a manual code review, right? Why, whatever, like Invicti or like some simple like DAS scan isn't enough. That like the gaps aren't recognized there because security in general has been so dependent on tooling over the years that they feel like a tool can solve most of these silos. And that may be the case for some organizations or for some risk prioritization, but it's not going to cover every case. As we see with all the breaches that are out there, right? Like most of the breaches fall down to simple misconfigurations, simple application security issues, simple like authorization flaws, like other problems that exist that could be caught if we had the right eyes on them.
Yeah, I just want to add to your point, which is I totally agree with what you're saying. And I believe that tooling or automation that is only supposed to be something that supports the human being doing the meaningful work. It's supposed to offload some of the things that they can't do because you can't be everywhere at once. But ideally, those things are just feeding back to that article. They're feeding the right information. And that's where we see a big gap is the right information to empower the individual. Human beings should and will be doing this job for a long time. They need to. It's a very important role, but we don't have a lot. We haven't had a lot at our disposal, right? Until things are starting to change. But until now, it's been really tough to like have the right information, you know, sourced and then analyzed and filtered and then, you know, give it, take action off of that data. So I feel like there's hope, I guess is what I'm saying. On the technical side, I feel like there's hope. From the philosophical side, I think we have to kind of do some of the things like Robert talked about too, with like education to certain C-suites, do some of the things you talked about, which is saying like, you know, you still bought the thing, even when I said we couldn't support it. So if it gets to that point, you know, just addressing it and saying, well, sure, it'll sit there now, you know, but still giving them the like, hey, we're not going to do certain things. Like, you know, we just don't have the people for it. We don't have the headcount for it. We don't have the resources. And then from the market condition side, it's like, I just hope that the market wakes up to the fact that like, yeah, you're going to need AppSec people.
Yep.
Especially now, more so than ever.
Yeah. And it is hard, right? Like it's not like the real basics are not super like exciting or flashy, right? It's a reason that I harp on logging so much is because I know it's not like this great thing, but it can feed into that DNR side, like the detection response side that Robert's talking about. And if you get it right, it's amazing what you can actually do. But that being said, I've seen very few organizations get that right and actually analyze their logs in a way that they're getting a full view of what's going on in the application, like all the way up the stack to what people do in the application. And then, you know, detecting based on that. And I know there's tools and people out there like, you know, like Heaven and Run Reveal that are trying to like expose some of that and give that context on the, you know, the DNR side of things. But it goes back to this idea that we do sound like auditors a lot of times to the rest of the organization on, hey, did we check this box? Did we go in and we've got like gates in place? We're going to prevent you from releasing this code that your customers are crying for because it's got a flaw in it. Right? Like, and we can't tell you exactly how that flaw would be executed, but we know that the flaw is there, right? Like that sort of thing is just such a hard conversation to have.
Anyway, it is a conversation to have.
Yeah.
But
it does have to happen. And there are good things happening in the space, right? Like, I think that's why you and I are so excited about generative AI, about LLMs, about using that across the board in application security to do that summarization, like we're talking about, to give us that context and push these conversations up to C-levels, up to the right players in your organization, so that you have the data in front of you to make your case as to why application security matters.
Yeah. And it's not just the tooling. I would say this. This would be my advice. Find the problem sets that you face, like choose the top three problem sets that you face that you're like, listen, or even the top one thing that you're just like, this problem stinks. I don't have a solution. And then try to use that like new technical capabilities to try and solve that thing and start there and then just continue on. And the reason I say that is you've used this phrase a lot. You say it's a solution without a problem. You said that about blockchain, I believe. That was your that was your statement you said a few times. Don't do that, right? Don't just build a solution for a problem that isn't really important. You know, focus on tackling one. I love it when people do that in their program, when they're actually speaking of cross-site scripting, that was a big one for GitHub. And the first thing they did was put all of their effort into burning that issue down. So,
And when it happens, it's great, right? Like, but kind of to put a bow on it, right? Like the final statement in this, you know, in this article that we've been talking about all day today, the theory practice gap in application security isn't going away on its own. By acknowledging it explicitly and working to address it systematically, we can build more effective security programs that actually work within the organization realities that we all navigate every day. And I mean, I think that's what we're trying to do, is recognize what the problems are and actually move the needle bit by bit. You know, we don't have to get overly nihilistic. We know that we see these issues and we see these gaps. From a security vendor perspective, hopefully some tools will start to come out of the LLM space that will help to give us more context to be able to solve these issues. But you can start to build that internally on your own. And yeah, go for it and jump into Slack if you have further comments here. I know we've been going for over an hour. And yeah, would love to continue that conversation, talk more about it, like what you are doing to, you know, gain context, to reduce those gaps, to actually, like, if you are using tools or seeing tools that are out there that give you that ability, we'd love to hear about it.
Just to recap for next week, because, you know, next week is Black Hat DEF CON, and I want to make sure that Seth and I get to see as many people as possible. So just want to recap sort of what's going on next week. So again, on Wednesday night, we're holding the worst security party, WURST. I put that link in the chats up top. Also in Slack, so you can go and RSVP, and if you know, we have people managing the attendee list. So in any case, you can sign up there. On Thursday night, if you weren't able to get to Wednesday, maybe you weren't accepted on the invite list or something happened or you couldn't make it or whatever it is, the next night, Thursday night, we'll be hosting a happy hour. More details to come. Watch our Slack. Go to our Slack. If you're not part of our Slack, go to our Slack in the general channel. Take a look, like keep an eye out. There's also a Vegas 2025 channel in our Slack that will also have details. So we'll be cross posting the details. We're trying to lock down the happy hour venue. And again, that's like both Wednesday and Thursday, free drinks, free stuff. So come out. And then Seth and I on Saturday, we'll be giving a panel, State of Absolute AppSec. We're going to try and figure out streaming and all of that. But in any case, we'll be giving that on Saturday. It's going to have Tanya and Jason Haddix, so Tanya from SendGrep and Jason Haddix from his own company, Arcanum. We're going to pick their brains. I know for me, I'm going to be giving two separate workshops at the AppSec Village. I frankly don't remember the exact, I think it's Friday and Saturday, Saturday in the morning, Friday in the afternoon. So if you want to learn more about like vibe coding, security flaws, and things of that nature, come there. And then I guess the last thing to mention is that if you were looking to do training and you hadn't signed up, which is like probably very, very rare by now if you hadn't signed up. But in case that was you wanted to do one of our trainings, we're hosting a DEF CON training Monday and Tuesday. All right. That's everything. That's the schedule for next week. And also, sorry, last thing. DM Seth and I, Seth or I, or both, in Slack if you want to meet up. We will figure out, like, if we need to get a signal channel going or something like that. But I want to meet people next week. I am very much there to network. And I know that Seth is very much there to network. We appreciate you all. We want to meet you and see you. So please don't be a stranger. Don't think it's weird. Feel free to DM us and we'll try to make something happen there.
We will have socks available and stickers and other things. So yeah, please reach out. I'd love to meet you and see you. Great. Well, with that, we will see everyone next week, I think, Ken, if we'll be doing an episode, and then in person at DEF CON. So yeah, looking forward to it. And thanks everybody for listening today. Thanks for all the comments. See y'all later.